Welcome to the Circle Sessions featuring the Circle of Experts. Each week, one of the Circle of Experts joins me to talk about critical aspects of growing your podcast. The Circle of Experts are Yasmin Robles and Izzy Dadosky from Rebel Marketing, Tanisha English-Amamu of TJE Communications, and Don the Idea Guy. I'm Brett Johnson, my podcast guy from Circle 270 Media Podcast Consultants. This week, Don the Idea Guy is here. He possesses creative powers beyond those of mere mortals. Don the Idea Guy rescues those in need of innovative ideas through his brainstorming sessions. You can find out more at dontheideaguy.com. Don, thanks for joining me today.
Good to see you, sir. How's it been?
Good. Hey, yeah, we've got lots to cover today. Fewer shows, but more episodes. Golden Globes. And podcasting, if you've not caught that, YouTube charts are in the play now. We're going to get techie with HLS streaming, dig a little bit deeper into what that is and why it's been around and why it's
not
utilized.
We're definitely not getting techie into it. We're just going to share this information.
At least
Justin Jackson, who's much smarter about podcasting than probably both of us.
At least to understand what those three letters mean. The Apple fee is gone, and which leads right into compensating creators. So, but yeah, the Listen Notes came out with its podcast directory. If you're not familiar with it, listener, say that the number of active shows continue to outpace any previous years, other than the pandemic peaks. Which I think they need to throw that out because that's just not a number to really look at. Yeah, you can say, but that was just an anomaly year and a half. They're saying that nearly 476,000 podcasts have been active so far, representing about 14% of all shows. So when you do, I guess the lesson learned here, quickly before we can go any further is, you can banner around that there are 4.5 million, 5 million podcasts out there. There's only a small percentage. We're talking, depending on the chart you look, 10 to 14% of shows are actually active. So it's still the wild, wild west. Create a podcast. Get in there and do it because you're up against, it seems like a lot, but when you really boil it down to the active shows, you're in good company. Get a podcast going. Stick with it.
I think they put this together just so they could have a sexy headline that talks about the activity being near pandemic peaks.
Yeah.
Because people were stuck at home and podcast listenership went up. Podcast creation went up. But this article and the numbers they're comparing is podcast creator activity. They really didn't address if listenership if that activity is also pandemic peak numbers, because listenership went up during that time as well. Mm-hmm. It's still encouraging to know that podcasting was not a fad. People are still producing and creating podcasts, and the activity level is high. That's a high bar to measure it again. So it is absolutely encouraging. What's maybe a little discouraging is I saw that you also included a stat from Listen Notes that talks about how you define an active podcast too. I would say an active podcast is one that's had an episode within the last 9 months or so. If you can birth a human child in 9 months, you ought to be able to produce a podcast within that amount of time, a podcast episode. But Listen Notes is saying that by their measurement, it's still a live show. It's only dead if the RSS feed has been deleted and the iTunes tag says it's dead. So you can have this podcast that's out there and hasn't had any new episodes in 20 years. But if the RSS feed is still active, then they're still going to consider it a live show. And that makes no sense. If your Uncle Joe dies in your living room watching TV, he's dead. You don't count him as dead after the funeral and when you bury him in the ground. He's been dead.
Yeah.
So it's a little weird. Their measurement tool, I don't necessarily agree with that, but I do agree with you in that the production of continually growing number of podcasts and podcast episodes, that's exciting for the category.
Yeah, I think from my perspective as a podcast consultant working with podcasters, I think podcasters are getting smarter about how they're producing their podcasts. That they're outsourcing. They are figuring out what they want to do with a season, what they're going to do with content. They're going at it about it more intelligently, understanding how much work it does take. And it's showing in the number of active shows that are continuing on. So that's a good thing. That means quality content is out there. And people that are really want to be in the space and creating stuff that they have a tribe for, they have a community for, they know where they're going with this, and they understand it takes a while for that to build up. It's not just, even, hey, it's six months, I'm going to have a Joe Rogan show. That doesn't happen. It's going to take, it takes a while. It takes a while. It just does.
Yeah, but even if you're just thinking about doing a podcast and people go, oh, is podcasting still a thing? You know, did I miss my opportunity?
Yeah.
No. It's the highest growth numbers since the pandemic. So absolutely, exactly. It's not over. People are just still catching up to it.
Yeah. Well, and to note, now large organizations are recognizing podcasts to give awards to. You caught this article about the Golden Globes in podcasting.
Yeah. I mean, you really haven't jumped the shark on a technology that other media companies are just beginning to spotlight. This past month, Golden Globes announced that they're adding a best podcast category starting next year. So, you know, you've got a lot of people touting nominations and winners of Golden Globes for acting, but you're going to have podcasts as one of these categories now. That's huge. And if the Golden Globes is doing it, who's going to do it next? You know, is there going to be an Emmys? I would imagine Emmys would be next, especially when you're talking about Netflix and perhaps Amazon starting to add podcast categories to their online streaming services. It absolutely makes sense that they'd want to win those awards.
Yeah, I would love to see, like an Emmys, come on board and really focus on the writers, the audio design of audio drama, that sort of thing. I think those underlying currents of really what makes audio special could be spotlighted versus a popularity contest. I mean, according to the Globes, which is fine, they have to start somewhere. The top 25 podcasts will qualify with a total of 6 final nominations for the category. So again, it's going to be the typical, you know what they will be, the top 25.
Yeah, but it says they're going to celebrate the achievements in the audio and visual. So I think that you do have an opportunity, just like the Oscars does, to recognize the technological contributors to the medium as well. But, you know, they have to structure this in a way that Joe Rogan's not going to win every award because he's always the top rated podcast, right?
Exactly.
So you're going to have the categories of dramatic or true crime or comedy. So I think that's exciting. I think the podcasters ought to be excited for it. Imagine somebody listening to this could create a campaign to get themselves nominated for the Golden Globes. You're out there rubbing elbows with the celebrities, baby.
Right, exactly. Well, and you make a really good point in regards to seeing Joe Rogan on these lists all the time. And I think the industry kind of has to become a little wary of that because we can't continually look at the same. Again, yes, these top 25 podcasts or top 50 are wildly, like the smart list of the world, they're wildly popular. And we don't want to discount they stuck to it and they got the job done and they've created podcasts that are bringing people into podcasting as a creator or a listener. But I hope to see new faces. Who's the next Joe Rogan? Who's the next Smartless podcast? And time will tell. I think these type of awards do help, including our next topic of YouTube with charts.
Well, I think you get the darlings of the medium too, right? So the big blockbuster movies of the summer for the last few years have been the superhero movies. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to beat them out of box office dollars by trying to compete at that level. But boy, you know, you win some darlings that are out there that, you know, the underrated indie film that nobody saw coming. And I think those are going to be the people who have opportunities, especially in the beginning with stuff like Golden Globes, because of the list. You know, you were alluding to the next topic that YouTube has released now a weekly top podcast list on their website. And it reminds me of the old, you know, calling back on our radio backgrounds, it reminds me of how much credence was given to Billboard magazine, Billboard magazine's weekly countdown. You know, you had Casey Kasem's Top 40, which was taken from Billboard stats of songs played on the radio and records sold or other measurements. Well, YouTube's got the weekly top podcast shows, and it's a chart like any other chart, you know, the top box office draws for the week too. So it's interesting seeing it, but we both kind of made a joke about how Joe Rogan's at the top. How often is he going to be listed at number one? I really hope that YouTube breaks down these weekly reports into categories. You know, let's see the true crime. Let's see the comedy. Let's see dramatic, you know, gaming, whatever podcast topics are out there. Come on, YouTube. You have the stats. Give us more than one podcast list.
Yeah, right. And I went to the link you sent to that you saw this posted up by a friend of yours. I've met him a couple of times, so Zeal. That I think the comments are worthy to comment about. There's one comment that mentions that would love to see Google Trends shows trending YouTube searches. Would be cool if they started including podcast specific search trends there as well. Yep. That would be cool. And I wonder if this might be the start of it. It just, these things have to start somewhere. And initially,
you're in the same family at that point, right? So, you know, Google owns YouTube, at least today. So they haven't had to divest themselves of it yet. Right. They ought to be able to show those trends.
Yeah, exactly. So I know
YouTube also launched their podcast page too. Like they totally revamped their podcast section.
Right. Right. So I think it's a move in the right direction that it's one of those, once it can be encapsulated, charted or whatever, then searches searches for certain content can be delivered a little bit easier because it's now in this bucket of something that YouTube's created, Google has created basically. So if you're doing the right thing, when you're posting up your YouTube podcast or, you know, video version, audiogram version of it, do the right stuff, put the show notes in there, do a transcription, get all that stuff up there, make it, let Google be able to find you. Don't just slap something up there and don't describe what you just posted on YouTube. Tell YouTube what you just posted.
And when you're dealing with data like this versus magazine pages, you know, magazine only had a certain page size to list the top number count of songs.
Right.
With data like this, we're talking about trends or just simply the YouTube list, there's no reason they can't go back into the thousands. Like, who's in 1,000th place on the weekly top podcast show? Because it's less interesting to see the same three people rotating through the top five than it is to go, who's number 950? I want to go check out 950. What are they doing? And I think you could have some fun going back and exploring some of these other shows that are making the list, but they're way down at the bottom of the list. Can I sort and show the highest number first instead of the lowest number first? That would be fun.
That would be, because I know Billboard I don't know what it looks like online, but they used to always have bubbling under the top 100. You'd see that sort of thing. And that's where radio, there are a few, you know, alternative rock, you know, back in the early, you know, 80s and 90s, that's where alt rock kind of came into play, that, you know, you grab these artists that were not making the top 100, but they were doing really good stuff. And you have the 97Xs of the world, or here locally in Columbus, Ohio, CD101, or, you know, whatever iteration it was at that point in time. There is a place for people that want to find things that are up and coming and brand new, because they're looking for something new. So these charts can lend to that.
Exactly. I was going with the new, like, where is YouTube's new and notable? That's one of the things people love about Apple's podcast listings, is the new and notable section. Mm-hmm. You know, you get some recognition just for being a newbie. So, you know, I really hope that YouTube grows this. It seems like we're heading in the right direction. You know how I feel about watching podcasts versus listing podcasts, but they impressed me with their podcast page. I love what they're doing with the weekly list, but what are you going to do next? Cause that was the minimum lift. That was the minimum viable project you needed for a podcast show, is a top 10 list. Let me see how else you're going to break this down. Let me see who you're going to help break as a new star. Let me see the long tail of what's the most obscure podcast title we can find, and let's make it fun and different.
Yeah, exactly. And tie it into Google Trends. So yeah. You've got your, every day you get your Google Trends that you can look up easily on Google. It's like, what podcast is tied to this trend possibly? It could be, they could do a lot of fun stuff with this as time goes on. And, but again, don't expect it today, but it's that all these things like you could do this, you could do this. And we just have to suggest or keep talking about it out loud.
And if they're going to go against Apple on this, I think Apple showing weakness in the podcast category. I believe that the opportunity is ripe for YouTube.
Yeah, well, and sticking with the Apple ID in the video, you caught this article or this video that Justin Jackson came away from the podcast movement, which happened in beginning of April, late March. I forget exactly when, but utilizing the HLS streaming technology that Apple invented, that they really aren't utilizing and helping podcasters in their own space.
Yeah, it was very cool to have Justin kind of record this 1 minute video. It's on his LinkedIn profile. I highly recommend you go in there and follow him. He's always sharing some great insights into podcasting. Yeah. But he came away from Podcast Movement where Apple was talking about this HLS streaming technology that they invented. And he rightly connected it to the fact that it's an opportunity for them to compete directly with what YouTube's doing with the podcast videos, because Apple's already been the place to go through iTunes for the podcast. They don't have to seek out podcast users. And they've got Apple TV, so they've got a video platform as well. It should be nothing to connect this HLS streaming to a pipeline of iTunes podcasts or Apple podcasting content and just bring it into the Apple TV platform, because you'll increase maybe some podcast subscriptions through its platform, because they can absolutely charge for it through that platform. Yeah. You've got a set base of users. You know, we've covered the news in the past about how Amazon and Netflix have their eye on starting to add podcast content to their streaming channels. It's going to be hard for them to go out and get podcasters into their environment. Apple already has them. Already has all the podcasters. Right. Why aren't you turning on this video stream?
Exactly. And so easy to do. You're already used to putting your podcasts into Apple Podcasts when you're, submitting your RSS. Boom, done. If you've got a video form of it, it should be 2 clicks and you're done. I mean, there'll be some parameters. I'm sure that Apple will tell you it must have this kind of artwork. It must be this, must be 4K or, whatever it might be. But Apple TV is a thing now, up to compared to maybe, 7-8 years ago? I don't know exactly when they started to really.
Some huge breakout hits, development deals.
Yeah.
They're missing out on a big opportunity here. And maybe they need to hire Justin to come in and consult on it, because how did they miss? I never heard of HLS streaming before Justin was talking about it. Mm-hmm. They need to have somebody inside knowing that they can make these connections. Why aren't they connecting these dots?
Right. I think if I understand correctly from listening to another podcast, the owner of Blueberry hosting platform, I believe if you use Blueberry, you can put your podcast into Apple TV via their platform. I'm sure it's at an upper level because of the bandwidth uploading TV video. Though? Yeah, I think so. Something with the Apple I take that back. It's not Apple TV, but it's video within the Apple podcast app. So that's been available.
That's different though. That's been around.
It is.
That was around early.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's the concept of video into Apple's world, and the TV thing makes perfect sense. You're exactly right. Yeah.
It never caught on. Just the iTunes environment is uncomfortable for most people to be in. With them, they knew it. They rebranded as Apple Podcasting and they don't even force you to go into iTunes anymore to do it. But the streaming, the like for like, the direct connection from podcasters going to YouTube, Netflix and Amazon getting ready to add podcast content. Apple TV should be first on the scene with second. They'll be behind YouTube, but they should be there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Maybe they missed it because they've been busy in court.
Possibly. If you haven't heard the news that Apple's 30% fee gone, gone. It's 86. Patreon, this article is focusing on Patreon. Patreon iOS update lets podcasters bypass the Apple's 30% fee. That's a whole lot of money. That's a lot of money over time.
Let's be clear on what this fee is.
Yeah.
These were purchase tariffs inside of apps running on the Apple platform. Mm-hmm. So, and the best example I gave that I could think of whenever you shared this news with me was Kindle. I have an iPhone, I have an iPad, and I use it to read Kindle books. And it used to be that I could open up my Kindle app on my phone or my iPad, and I could purchase another book from Amazon to read. Well, I had no idea that Apple was charging them 30% of the sale. So I'm buying a $1.99 book, and 30% of that they have to pay to Apple just for the privilege of being able to buy within an app they developed, that Amazon developed. They had to pay that back. I mean, it is incredibly punitive, and it cuts deep into profits for any company. Gaming apps were really going after, going into the app and buying the extra weaponry or the armor to protect your character inside your war game. They were really leveraging a lot of lawsuits against Apple. And I think they were willing to take this fight to Apple. And I think they finally won. I'm anxious to have the ability back to buy new content within the Kindle app. The headline you shared is Patreon. Patreon's pushing their podcasters to go ahead and start charging subscriptions through the Patreon app so that they can bypass this now downvoted 30% cut.
Yeah. So the updated app for Patreon gives the users a variety of options to make in-app purchases. That includes credit cards, Venmo, PayPal, and Apple Pay. Spotify said earlier this month, this being May of 2025, that they announced a similar update in the wake of the court ruling against what many called an Apple tax. So that you automatically got a raise if you use Patreon. And podcasters, for the most part, that's their default. Patreon is where they're going. It's just because Patreon's been very podcast friendly. So if you decided not to use Patreon because of the 30% fee of Apple, it's gone. Get in there, make some money.
You weren't paying as a podcaster. You weren't paying that 30% fee to Apple,
but it was Patreon being taken out.
So if you were still able to buy through Patreon, I don't know if Patreon took it down their ability to purchase. I don't know.
Yeah.
Most of the apps took out the ability to make purchases in their app for Apple devices. So Spotify, we talked when they originally launched audiobooks. It was really exciting. Spotify was going to be this place to go for audio, and I thought it was very smart for them to add audiobooks to their catalog. But really, even before the launch got going, they had to pull the ability to buy those audiobooks out of their Apple apps. So you could listen for free to audiobooks, which was great because they gave every premium Spotify member 15 hours of audiobook listening as part of their existing membership. But if I liked a book and I wanted to buy it, they would not let me buy it within the Apple app because it was going to cost them 30% of the purchase. Mm-hmm. And that's the same reason Amazon pulled the ability to buy Kindle content from their app, because they were going to have to pay that Apple tax to allow a transaction to happen within their own app environment. So this is huge. I'm really excited about it and can't wait to see some of that really customer friendly ability to make those purchases without all the friction that had been introduced because of Patreon or because of the Apple tax. To buy more content for my Kindle to read on my iPhone, I had to go to the Apple website. I could view it in my browser on my phone, my phone browser, but I had to go to the Amazon store there. I could not buy it from the Amazon app. Mm-hmm. So it's friction that was introduced because of the things Apple was doing, but it made Amazon and Spotify look bad because it looked like it was their fault. And the original lawsuit that was there in the contracts, the original contracts that Amazon and Spotify signed to have their apps available on there, they were not allowed to say that's why you couldn't buy in the app anymore. It was in the thing, and Apple threatened to sue them if they said, well, it's Apple's fault or Apple's charging us. So they were not allowed to say it. So you couldn't even give the customers a reason why you couldn't buy stuff.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. So it's changed. I think it's that if you, as I mentioned earlier, that if you'd been on the fence to use Patreon, do it. Not that you were losing money necessarily. I misquoted myself, but it's that now Patreon's updated that you can utilize them for anything, which is great, or any kind of payment option. So it just,
it's very cool.
Yeah,
big
exactly.
News,
Yeah. And in our final article, you had found through eMarketer that they did a poll of marketers facing challenges when determining creator compensation. So it's these marketers who work with creators.
Yeah, this is as of February. They were talking about the percentage of U.S. marketers who work with creators listed these things as their biggest challenges when trying to compensate creators for for deals that they're trying to work with them on. They listed the top one was internal budget constraints. You know, you're always going to run into budget issues, but that's their problem when working with compensating creators, their own internal budget constraints.
Right.
The second one was lack of standardized pricing benchmarks. You know, we've talked before about everybody charges something different for the prices. You know, you're charging pennies per pound for impressions, for these individual plays of an ad. Are you charging premium prices for live reads? Are you sponsoring content? There's a lack of standardized pricing benchmarks. That was how they defined this challenge. And that makes it harder for them to just go out and buy things because everybody's calling it something different and everybody's charging something different.
Right.
Next up was inflexible or high rates from creators. Creators rightly believe that what they produce has value and they're trying to charge accordingly. The people who are in a position to compensate creators for that content say that that's a problem for them because creators aren't willing to wheel and deal off of the high rates that there's the high in quotes, air quotes that they're setting because everything's relative, right?
Yes, correct.
Another one's unclear ROI metrics. You know, we know from working in advertising, ROI is something everybody's interested in after the campaign has run. You know, they don't tell you what they're trying to do before the campaign unless you really pry it out of them. But at the end, they just tell you the ROI wasn't there, even though they can't define what that ROI was going to be. And then finally, it was time consuming to go through negotiations.
Yeah.
In a flat out picture, that information is helpful to know that that's how they're defining it. But as a creator, you need to look deeper. You need to look into what's really behind what they're saying with these labels. And for example, if they're saying internal budget constraints is a big challenge, you as the creator, if you're going to work with somebody, you need to know as much as you can about the client budget. You know, if you know how much they have to spend and what they're trying to achieve, which goes to speak to ROI, you're going to be able to create something custom that will define how it performs by the ROI and will work within the budget they have. You know, they talk about the inflexible high rates. Certainly publish rates at whatever you think is fair for what you do, but be willing to customize what you're doing to help them achieve their ROI, to help stay within their budgets and get them to work with you, make it easy to do business with you and help eliminate and alleviate some of the friction they're feeling from these categories could mean all the money in the world to you. You know, if everybody's going through these agencies and the agencies are all working from the same price list and they're all lowballing stuff, the value's not going to be there on the ROI. Custom projects, you know, Brett, you worked in the same environment I did with media. We always had more success with custom campaigns rather than selling off of a price list, right? Everybody asked for a rate card, but nobody wanted to buy off a rate card.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, the other items that you noted about just understanding the pain points, it's that you've got to ask questions. You've got to ask what is the ROI, can, and also control some metrics if you can. And have access to them as well, too. If it's, let's say it's all based on, okay, the call to action is sign up for our newsletter. That's what we want you to accomplish with what we're going to pay you to do. The call to action is sign up for newsletters. Well, if they don't show you what the end result was in a 90-day campaign, that the goal was 500 signups, but they don't tell you that they didn't reach it or they reached more than what they reached. Maybe they got 750, but you want to know that information.
Yeah. A lot of people will tell you they want to grow their customer base, right? So I want to grow my list. Okay, great. How many people do you get on your list a week now? So know the base number that you're working with. Oh, we get three or four signups, or we get 100 signups. Okay, great. So you know that you need to come up with a campaign that will generate more than the signups they'll get just by default.
Right.
And I think my experience has always been best if I control the signup form. So I can produce a signup list that is calling for my audience to sign up for my client's promotion, and they can sign up on my form. So I know exactly how many people are coming in. I know that I got 10 today. I know I got 20 the day before, and I can keep an active count. I can adjust my my messaging and my efforts based on the results I'm getting, rather than waiting to the end of the campaign, you being completely blind to how many signups you were getting and relying on them to tell you and base the ROI at the end of the campaign. Oh, well, normally we get 10 signups a week. We ran your campaign and, you know, we didn't get that many more. Okay, well, what's that mean? I mean,
yeah.
Did you actually send them 100? And how are you in a position to debate the numbers you signed up?
Yeah.
So I think you need to have as much under your control and monitor to make it successful for your client. In the end, you're giving them the list because people signed up for their list. But this way you have insight into it while you're collecting, and you know the health of the campaign as you're going along, rather than waiting to the end when it's too late to do anything about it.
Yeah, I think it's that don't be afraid to ask. You might be surprised that they will tell you what they're looking for. Because they probably contacted you initially. Maybe you didn't go knocking on the door. They contacted you to do this. Well, they want it to work. They're interested. You've intrigued them with what you can do. So get that conversation opened up.
That's a smart question. Don't just start with what's your budget. Like, don't do that. Right. What are you trying to achieve?
Yeah.
And ask what they're doing now, so you know how and if you can help them improve on it. I remember working with a car dealership, and we said, you know, what's your goals for the campaign? Like, we want to sell 100 cars this month. Okay. How many cars do you normally sell in a month? 10. Yeah, we're not going to be able to help you sell 100 cars this month if you've never sold 100 cars in a month before.
Right. Right. Exactly. Well, and some of these areas, one that really catches my eye is the unclear ROI on metrics. That may be something that a lot of marketers are not smart about anyway. They just start to throw money out there, and the ROI may be what bites both of you in the butt, quite frankly.
Yeah.
You just never know. But it's that, but get some clarity though. Try to get that clarity as much as possible. Maybe help that marketer get through this, that they have higher hopes than they really should with what you're under contract to do, and kind of go, you know, I think, like we keep saying at the number 10, 10 is reality. Let's shoot for 10. That's what's 10. Let's put it actually, another way of saying this is how many, what is 10 worth to you? How much does 10 represent?
Next. Yeah. Yeah. Is help. A lot of customers are going to need you to help them understand what the real ROI is. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about, hey, we got 10 people on our list, well, what's that mean? How many people on your list? What's the percentage of those people that will buy once? Mm-hmm. And then what's the percentage of those people returning to buy again? And for how long? You know, we get into what's the lifetime value of a customer. Let's just start with what's the initial value of a customer. Mm-hmm. What is that actually worth to you? Yeah. And if you can get three or four of those out of the campaign, sometimes a campaign investment is cheap by comparison to how many customers you can get out of that. But it's a matter of asking the right questions. And I think that one of us on this show actually wrote a book about podcast questions.
Yeah, I think so. Somewhere around it, it's floating around there. You know how you write stuff, you kind of put it in Google Drive and
why don't you dust you that off and make it part of the show notes?
Because I distinctly remember somebody
early on
writing
a book of podcast questions.
Podcast questions, exactly. Yeah. Well, and you know, I'll go deeper into this rabbit hole in regards to this ROI stuff that you know, it's actually you could learn about your viewers, listeners with this exercise. That let's say that, you know, again, the number of 10, let's say you got 10 new clients for them and you have a long-term contract with them. Let's say it's over 90 or, you know, 6 months. You start to learn about what your listeners do. Are they long-term clients? Do they continue to buy over and over again? If it can be tracked, that's kind of really cool information to know about what your listeners do. As we keep reading, that podcast listeners are rabid for their podcasts. So basically, whatever you say, they're going to continue to do over and over and over again. If it's an opportunity to buy something over and over. You know, if it's a GoDaddy, well, I mean, how many domains can you own other than if you're, you know, Don the Idea
Guy? You really
want
to ask me that?
Exactly.
I'm the wrong guy to ask that question.
That's why I brought that up. Yeah, I know you as a collector of .coms. I know of other people.
Want to buy some domains?
Exactly. I know of other people that are LLC collectors. Just own it. But I think, you know, this is really a good jumping off point and ending point for us. That hopefully, this as a listener, you're kind of, this is getting your wheels turning about what questions to ask. How do you go with this? I mean, we've got other examples. We'll probably talk on the next episode about some opportunities to, you know, basically sell your episode you know, sell yourself as a content creator.
We didn't have time to talk about it this episode, but next one, we're going to talk about this.
There was some link issues that we didn't want to talk about it yet in regards to, you know, giving you the whole picture, but there is some really cool creative ideas, which you always get from this podcast with this episode between Don and myself. If you want to talk more about this, Don, let's talk about how to get a hold of you, you know, dive into any of these concerns. Yeah.
Best place to find me anywhere online is just search for Don the Idea Guy, accept no substitute. It's Don the Idea Guy.
I was going to say, that's pretty long. Don the Idea Guy, accept no substitutes. That's a long title.
I might go by that domain, acceptnosubstitutes.com.
It would probably be available in some fashion. Exactly. Yeah. And if you want to talk to me a little bit more about, you know, the you've got the podcast and you want to develop it into that. I mean, we'll get Don in a call. Either way, go to mypodcastguy.com, get on my booking calendar as well. It doesn't matter. We'll both be on the call if need be. If you know, just, hey, I want Brett along, or, you know, Don, you're fine. You know, that sort of thing. Please do, because that's what we're here for. We love doing this stuff. We know it leads to, if it doesn't lead to business, it's okay. We know that having these conversations with you, we work for the referral as well. We want, you to know that, yeah, we know what we're talking about and we helped you get to where you need
something,
to.
Take one of our cool ideas, put it into action. And, somebody goes, hey, where'd you come up with that? And you go, these two clowns gave me this idea.
Exactly. We'd love to have that. Don, thanks for joining me again. Appreciate it.
Always fun, Brett.
Yeah, thanks.